A podcast of the cinema.
I'm Dave White.
You are. I'm Alonzo Duralde.
We're both film critics.
Yeah.
This is podcast of the cinema. You said podcast
I
of the cinema
say that,
already.
Yes.
We've been doing this for 5.5 years and we are quite professional now in our presentations and all our other ways.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the first thing people think when they think of this program is professionalism,
sound quality on point, smooth presentation, announcer deliveries,
getting right to the point,
ready, yeah,
yes, always.
All right, so this episode, I'm so turned around.
I know, we've
in
been
my brain
taping episodes. This episode actually is going to go up today.
This episode goes up today. Yeah. This is the fourth episode that we have recorded in the past 2 days.
Correct.
And it's not that I'm running out of things to say.
Oh no.
Ever. But I'm completely confused now as to what I've talked about, where, when the episode we recorded is going to post. I'm leaving it all up to you to figure that out.
All right.
We recorded one LKTV, and that one went up yesterday.
Yes.
Although Patreon's having a problem with it.
The Patreon app, maybe just the Patreon app on iTunes, is being weird about downloading it, so I'm trying to get that fixed.
Oh,
as
look,
we
there's
speak.
My kettle. You keep telling everybody what's going on.
Okay. So anyway, so that episode has been recorded and is up, and if you are an LK subscriber, you can definitely get it off the Patreon website, but if you work off the Patreon app, you may be having some difficulties, but we're working on that and trying to get it taken care of. I think it's just the app. So anyway, trying to get that taken care of. I've contacted Patreon and we'll see what happens. And then yesterday we recorded, no, sorry. That was one of the ones from yesterday. 2 days ago, we recorded next week's Linoleum Knife episode, the one that will air next weekend. Because I'm going to be in Venice for the next week. So we pre-taped the one for the weekend of September 2nd, where a few new movies open that I've seen and Dave hasn't, so I kind of did a quick pre-see, and then we mainly read Letters, because we're behind on Letters, and we didn't even get completely caught up on Letters, but we read a whole ton of Letters. So
90 minutes of Letters.
If you've been waiting for yours to be read, check it out. It's a fun episode, even if you haven't written us a letter. We knife some top 10 lists, we answer some questions, and talk about various topics, so I think you'll enjoy it.
We explain life,
as always. And then we did another Linoleum Knife TV, another LK TV for next week.
I'm sorry, I'm mentioning.
Excuse me. It's a jamboree this morning.
Everything's going crazy. Yeah. You're sneezing.
My niece is going to college, back to college. It's a whole lot of things.
Is that everything you need?
Yeah.
You're not. These are sitting here for a while. These boxes.
Here.
Okay. All right. Enjoy right that on. Senior year, you.
Bye.
Bye.
It sounds like we just sent her off across the country. We sent her off
several blocks away.
10 minutes away.
Yes.
She's been, you just, listen, people who've been listening.
Her parents sent her cross country.
Her parents did send her cross country, and she's been living with us all summer.
Yes.
And today I got up and I made
chocolate chip muffins.
Chocolate muffins,
yes.
With chocolate chips in them.
Right. Yes. Forgive me.
And I didn't even know that she was going to need food. Just 10 minutes ago, she told us that there's no dining room in this place.
Emerson has this whole swanky high rise on Sunset. There's dorms in there. There are classrooms. And apparently there was a cafeteria, and now there isn't.
Right. And so I sent her off with half a dozen big muffins.
Yes. Good uncle that you are.
I'm a very good uncle.
Anyway, we also pre-taped next week's
LKTV. By the definition of good uncle is the one that bakes
yes,
all the time.
I think that's a given. Yeah. We pre-taped another LKTV episode that where it's basically Dave and I reminiscing about semi-forgotten television programs of our childhood. trying to explain what UHF was.
I like the word reminiscing because it is a word used by old people to describe a thing that only old people do. You never hear young people talk about old people reminiscing.
Well, young people can't reminisce because they haven't lived enough yet.
They can reminisce to their early childhood.
I suppose.
Yeah. In any case, you just listened to our niece leave the apartment for her new location.
Yes.
I mean, she's been doing it all day, but I think that was
The last
of the things. She'll be back over here in a week for dinner.
We've not seen the last of her. Relax.
Oh, she already told me.
Yes. No, I know.
She's like, this whole not having a cafeteria thing means I'm coming over to eat a lot.
Yes.
And I said, okay, sure, whatever.
No, Cool.
I'll send you a text alert when I'm making food.
She's always welcome.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, this week we have four new movies to talk about, and one of them...
Well, you have...
I have four new movies to talk about. Dave has one.
I've seen one of them.
One of mine that I've seen is so bad, I'm going to do a Dave White.
In my defense, it's the end of August.
Yes.
Ain't nobody care about these crappy movies.
But here's the thing. Two of the ones...
Two
of them are really good.
Yeah.
So, one of the movies, however, is so bad, I'm going to do a Dave White, and I'm going to spoil the whole thing at the end of the episode.
Okay, so here's what I want you to do.
So there's going
to
be two goodbyes from Dave White, and if you don't want to find out how Gus Van Sant's The Sea of Tree ends, you can turn off after the first goodbye.
You have, and I'm going to stopwatch you,
uh-huh,
60 seconds to talk about Sea of Trees.
Uh-huh.
Who's in it? It's from Gus Van Sant.
Mm-hmm.
Who's in it?
Matthew McConaughey, Naomi Watts, and Ken Watanabe.
Okay, now, starting when I say go, you tell me what it's about.
Okay.
And at the 30-second mark, I will tell you to keep going, and then you tell me what's wrong with it.
Okay.
Then at the end, after I say the first goodbye,
you can spoil it. At the end of the show, I'll do the spoiler.
You can spoil it. Because we don't have time to waste on a sad thing happening to a great director.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Are you ready?
Yeah.
And go.
Okay. McConaughey plays an American who goes to the legendary Suicide Forest.
Like that horror movie.
Like that horror movie.
Okay.
That forest, in addition to being known as the Suicide Forest, is also known as the Sea of Trees.
What was the horror movie called?
Into the Forest, I think.
All right.
So he's obviously planning to kill himself, but before he can, he stumbles upon Ken Watanabe, who is dazed and bleeding, and despite his desire to kill himself, McConaughey winds up sort of taking care of Ken Watanabe and trying to get him out of the forest.
Okay, you're at 30 seconds.
And he has lots of flashbacks to Naomi Watts, his wife that he fought with a whole bunch. Anyway, the flashbacks are terrible and super on the nose, and all the fighting scenes are stupid. And then the movie then launches into this series of twists that are, each one is more annoying than the previous one, until finally at the end I was like, oh, no wonder people at Cannes booed, because this is ridiculous. It's beautifully shot. And if it had been like Jerry or one of those Van Sant movies where people don't talk in the wilderness, it might have been lovely. But boy, they start talking and the whole thing gets harder.
I don't like it when people talk too much.
Yeah,
well, except us.
You would be annoyed by this movie because in between the gorgeous cinematography, there's just blah, 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 blah. And then the twists are terrible. And I will give them all away at the end of the program.
I'm going to see it anyway, probably.
You do that.
All right, you did that in 86 seconds.
Okay, well.
Sorry. You went over.
All right, now The Hollers.
Now The Hollers, which I, in spite of the presence of character actress Margot Martindale, of whom I am a big fan.
You realize when you say character actress Margot Martindale.
I know what I'm doing.
All right. You don't watch BoJack, so
But I'm going to watch BoJack because everyone tells me how great it is.
It is great, but I don't call her character actress Margot Martindale because I was a fan of her pre-BoJack. John Krasinski directs. It's his second directorial effort, and it is...
Wait, is he bearded and hot like in 13 no, Benghazis?
This is the clean-shaven, blank-staring John Krasinski.
You
like new beefed
up. I like
up
Navy
Krasinski.
SEAL
well,
or Marine you, SEAL.
Well, he's got that Jack Ryan series coming up on Amazon.
Forces.
I'm sure he's going to be all beefy in that one. Anyway.
But I like him I like Benghazi Krasinski.
So this is like the millionth Sundance movie about a constipated white New Yorker who gets his groove back when he goes back to his small town and dysfunctional family because his mother is dying of cancer.
Great.
And it has nothing new to bring to the table. And the weird thing is, there's a really good movie about a constipated white New Yorker who gets his groove back by going home to his small town or dysfunctional family to take care of his mother who has cancer. It's called Other People, and it opens on September 9th, and I highly recommend it, and we'll talk about it more when that rolls around. In the meantime, do not see The Hollers.
You know, I'm not timing you on this one.
Oh, I thought you were.
But you can still go fast.
I will, despite the great, great, great Margot Martindale, who does her best to fireman's carry to this movie to anything resembling, like, emotional relevance. It is so pat and cliched and dopey, and you can tell that John Krasinski has a great phone list of famous people, because this is the kind of movie where any character that has like four lines is played by Mary Kay Place or Mary Elizabeth Winstead or Randall Park or Charlie Day.
Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
Yeah, exactly. All the Marys. It's a little disconcerting.
Mary J. Blige.
It's a little disconcerting. But it's, you know, Martindale's great. Richard Jenkins has some nice moments with her. But ultimately, this movie is phonus.
Mary Gross.
Is phonus balonus, as the old Looney Tunes might say.
That disappoints me. A lot.
Although, weirdly, people are talking about this being Martindale's Oscar movie, and it would be perfect if she finally did win an Oscar for being in a crap movie like this one.
Why would it be perfect?
Because that's how the Oscars work.
I know.
Nobody ever wins for the right movie. She's not going to win for Parisia Tim. She's going to win for the frickin' Hollers.
Right. No,
sorry,
I know.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I know. Well, you weren't interrupting me.
Oh, okay.
I just, you know.
You said this was disappointing. I thought you were going somewhere.
Well, it's disappointing because as a, you know, a recipient of white male privilege, sometimes I would like the movies that my people make about us to be not crappy. I mean, I'm taxed for being gay, but otherwise, I got all the privileges, you know, and it makes me annoyed when, it makes me annoyed when white people who have pretty much everything can't make a good movie.
Yeah, I mean, again, this cast, because like Choteau Copley's in it and Anna Kendrick.
I don't like Choteau Copley.
You won't like him in this either.
He actively annoys me.
He's kind of annoying in this one. Josh Groban is in this movie. Like, you could take
that. Josh Groban is funny.
He is funny.
Yeah,
I much prefer him acting than singing. You could do something with this cast that is way more worth watching than this movie.
I brought up the whole white privilege thing because I was reading this long thread today on Facebook about the matrix of domination and how people dominate each other based on, you know, the segments of privilege that they have that all, you know, glue together. Mm. Like, so
straight white male Christian rich.
You know, you're at, if you're okay. So here's what I get. I get male privilege.
Mm-hmm.
I get white privilege.
Mm-hmm.
I get cisgender privilege.
Mm.
I get neurotypical privilege.
Ooh.
That's the new one that I hadn't really been reading much about. I get the ableist privilege. The only thing that I get taxed for is gayness. And the only thing that I don't necessarily get taxed for, but that I had sort of impeding me,
mm-hmm,
was poverty as a, you know, mm-hmm, growing up, we weren't rich at all. And so, that's like, but the poverty thing just set a fire in me to not be, you know, struggling my whole life.
Yeah.
So I, you know, went out and did the thing you do to try to not stay in the poverty.
You became a school teacher.
Yeah. And then a writer.
Way to go, Dave.
Smart. Those were good decisions. And because of being male and white and able-bodied,
mm-hmm,
it was not difficult for me to find work.
Right.
To get myself out of the hole of poverty.
Sure.
Still gay.
Yeah.
That's going to be an ongoing issue. for a lot of folks in the world. But yeah, like I already knew all this stuff, but to have it all sort of like mapped out like that was sort of like, oh yeah, I check off that box and that box and that box and that box. And then when you brought up the Hollers, I thought, wait, I get almost all these boxes and John Krasinski gets all of them. And he can't even make a good movie. What's the problem?
Well, he didn't write it, but, you know.
Well, who wrote it?
It's a script he wanted
to
write.
Who wrote it?
The guy who wrote Grace is Gone.
Oh, God, that was terrible.
Yeah, well, so is this.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I'm just snuggling under that blanket of political correctness that we were talking about. Wait. Is that episode? No, that episode hasn't aired yet.
No.
See, this is the problem with recording.
I know, the pre-taping, it's baffling.
There's such a great review left for us on iTunes. It's my favorite review.
Oh, yes.
And it's a review of praise. It's a praise review.
Yes.
And at the same time, it's a review of, like, busting our balls.
For being snooty.
For being elitist and snooty and living and, under a blanket of political correctness.
Yes. And mocking people who go to the movies to be entertained.
Yeah. Which is all true, and so that's why I love this review, because it's as though...
It was 5 stars, that's what matters.
It was a review that read as though, like, our friend Aaron had written it. Like, one of our best friends who loves us...
In chops-busting mode.
And cannot stop bishing on us at the same time. So it's like the perfect combination of things, but I love the expression blanket political correctness.
Yes.
Because, you know, screw it, that's what I am. I don't care. Come at me.
Oy. So the one movie that we did both see is a surprisingly good late August entry. Surprising in many ways because it's a late August horror movie. That's a lot of tags that are usually like... Nyeh.
Don't Breathe.
Don't Breathe.
Don't Breathe.
The new film from Fede Alvarez, the Uruguayan director who did the remake of Evil Dead.
Which was fine.
Which was fine, and which also starred Jane Levy.
She was in it too. Jane Levy from that show.
Suburgatory.
Which I never watched, but you did. And
I
she
did,
used
yeah.
to have red hair, and now she's blonde.
Correct.
And now as a blonde, she looks like youthful Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah, I was getting total Reese Witherspoon in Freeway vibes from her on this movie. So it's kind of like... Wait Until Dark if you were put in the position of empathizing with the home intruders.
It's also like Green Room in that it is about people trapped in a
place.
Yeah.
So the premise is that these three Detroit teenagers, Jane Levy, Dylan Minnette, and I forget the other guy.
The other one
have been doing...
Lady Edith.
Yes, have been doing these home invasions to steal money. And Dylan Minnette's dad works for a security company, so he's got keys...
To steal money and get out of Detroit.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
They're stealing
money.
Sorry,
I didn't mean to
derail you. They're stealing money so they can get out of Detroit.
Yeah.
And Dylan Minnette's dad works for...
That's important. That's why...
Yes.
I had to make sure you were going to get it.
I was getting
there. Listen, I got to make sure.
Dylan Minnette's dad works for a security company, so he's got keys to all these houses, but he's also very mindful about not taking too much because he doesn't want to cross over into, like, grand larceny. So he basically just, they take cash, you know, like minor valuables, but like nothing
They
gigantic.
Break and enter, but they are petty about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
They keep it low. And so, of course, they want to, you know, they want to do one last big score. And Dylan Minnette doesn't want to do it, but he obviously has a crush on the Jane Levy character, who is girlfriends with Lady Edith. And so he unwillingly kind of goes along with it. And the plan is to... There's a blind veteran...
While you keep talking, I got a little cup back. We can't keep calling him Lady Edith.
Who won a... Played by Stephen Lang. He won a big settlement when a rich person hit and killed his daughter with a car. He has this house, you know, in this neighborhood of Detroit where there's just nobody around, and so they figure...
All the houses on that street are
abandoned yeah.
except his.
So Stephen Lang and a vicious Rottweiler live in the house, and they think, oh, blind guy, no problem, we'll break in, you know, yada-da-da.
Except he's a blind guy who used to be, like, a super soldier.
Yeah, like he's a blind Navy SEAL or something, so he...
And he lost his sight. In Iraq.
Yeah, like from a shrapnel grenade.
Yeah.
So he is not to be trifled with, and, you know, once the lights go out, he is definitely at an advantage.
And the lights go out.
So the movie very, you know...
The guy's name is Daniel Zovato.
Thank you.
And he hasn't been in much.
Yes. Yeah. Daniel Zavato, you remember him as Lady Edith.
Well, he was in It Follows.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, you've got these kids who, on the one hand, yes, they're home intruders and they're trying to steal this guy's money, but you understand why they're doing it, and you know they're not just like out for kicks or whatever. And then the longer they're in that house and they find things out about the blind man, that's how he's credited in the film. He's not such an innocent victim in all this, so
he's got some things,
some secrets.
Yeah.
So that, you know,
and those secrets get real gnarly.
Yeah. So the movie really kind of plays with you and you know where your sympathies lie, but it is a super effective thriller. It confines all the action within the space of this house, and you know throws in the whole elements of him being, you know, this soldier guy and the, you know, the dark and the quiet and the and all this stuff. I have, you know, we talk about this on the show sometimes. Horror movies and comedies is when studios are most likely to pack the house with recruited viewers.
Yes.
Because they don't trust critics to like have impulses of their own. So
right.
They figure if we're surrounded by people who are laughing or who are scared.
Well, it's that old idea that we can't enjoy, you know,
A popcorn movie.
Or any sort of
entertainment.
Know, entertainment that is aimed at everyone.
Yeah.
That we are inherently looking to crap on anything that isn't the new Lav Diaz film.
Yeah, we're persnickety.
Which you need to see when you go to Venice.
I will try.
Do it.
I'll try. Is it 4 hours?
It might be six. I don't care.
That might eat into my day. I have work to do there. Mm. Anyway, but yeah, we go to the screening and there's like 3 rows of critics and the rest is, you know, folks they got off the radio or whatever. I cannot remember recently having been in that full of theater that got that silence.
Yeah.
Because
you could hear a pin drop.
You could
in
hear
that
a
theater.
Pin drop because yeah. The people in
and
the movie.
The film uses silence.
Yeah. The whole thing is yeah. The people in the movie trying not to be noticed by this guy. So they're trying not to breathe too loudly or step on the, you know, creaky part of the floor or whatever. And so everybody just got so quiet. It was so exciting. Super tense. Really, really well done. I like this movie a lot.
It is so beautifully choreographed.
Mm-hmm.
And so tightly shot and tightly edited. There's no wasted moment.
Mm.
It moves and moves and moves and moves and moves. And even when it is silent and even when people are being very still, you're sitting there doing this.
Yeah.
Waiting for what's coming next. And what's coming next comes along very quickly.
Yeah, Dave likes to make fun of me for being an easy mark for jump scares, which I've gotten better about over the years. But
this one got me a good 3 times.
Yeah.
And I hollered at least twice, like when something was what took me completely by surprise, and I went, "Whoa!"
Yeah, you and Christy and I were all sitting there like,
yeah. And in spite of the fact that I wouldn't technically call this a horror film.
It's a thriller.
It is a thriller, and it is thrilling, and it is... What I've been hearing from some of the naysayers lately is they don't believe that some of the things that happen in the film could happen. Mm. And I think I would argue that, and I have argued that on a few points, that I feel it really does.
Yeah,
narratively, I really do feel it kind of holds together.
Yeah, given the space and the blind man's ability to manage it.
You do make allowances, as you do frequently in horror, for the ability of people to find themselves in an impossible situation, get injured in a way that would fell a normal person,
right.
And then get up and run some more.
Yeah. Adrenaline.
That happens in a lot of horror movies. And this one doesn't bend those rules quite so egregiously.
Yeah.
And
also, the characters aren't idiots. So nobody does that thing where you're like, oh, God, don't walk in there. Like,
right.
Everything they do makes sense in the moment, whether or not it winds up being the right thing to do.
Furthermore, there is a morality at work in the film in that there is no one who is all good or all bad.
Yeah.
And, well, there kind of is. But but in general, you're dealing with people who are all victims of something that has happened to them.
Yes.
And some circumstance, some accident, some you know, twist of fate in their life
sure.
has left them disadvantaged in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And you find yourself having to choose who you're going to root for. And then you might have to change your mind
right.
about who you're going to root for. And because the movie so skillfully destabilizes you in your loyalties and in your expectations of what a horror movie does, like in the first 20 minutes, when it would get quiet, I would think, here comes a jump scare. And then the jump scare wouldn't happen.
Mm.
And when it didn't happen, I thought, oh. It's going to be like that. they're gonna jump scare you when you're absolutely not expecting it, and then they might never follow through with a jump scare when you are expecting it.
Right.
So that made me kind of hold on even tighter to my armrests
because you can't predict the rhythms of where this is going to go.
I love this movie. Like it, I finished it. I was out of breath. It's one of the most exciting films, genre films, or any other kind of films I've seen all year. In terms of how excited and adrenaline-filled it got me, I would liken it almost to The Raid.
Wow, okay.
And even though The Raid is, you know, is the top of the heap. The Raid is the top of the mountain. So this isn't like The Raid. Don't everybody get me wrong and say, oh, you said it was like The Raid. It was as exciting in the moment
sure.
as some of the more exciting moments of The Raid.
All right, that's fair.
And I think Stephen Lang's performance is fantastic, and he barely speaks.
Mm-hmm.
I like Jane Levy in this a lot as well. Nothing felt tired and worn out. Nothing felt like it was done...
Like they were phoning it in.
...for the sake of expedience, or to get a PG-13,
or cheap effect,
or to cheapen it,
yeah.
Everything felt really thought out and really designed to stick you in the gut.
Yes, and Dylan Minnette has very good horror movie eyes.
He does. He seems scared of everything.
Yeah, for a movie where people have to like be terrified and stay silent, he has very expressive eyes that get real wide.
Right. I thought he was Logan Lerman for the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, you were saying that. No, they're similar. Dylan Minnette was the older brother in Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day.
Right.
And he's in some other things. But yeah, I like him. I want to see him in more stuff.
So this is terrific.
Yes.
Read reviews until you see it.
Yeah, go in knowing as little as possible.
We haven't told you very much, actually, at all.
No.
And even the ending...
Is smart,
because when you walk out of the ending, you're thinking, okay, if they were to make a sequel, how would it work?
Right.
And I don't know how they would make it work. Because of the way, the circumstances under which it ends,
sure.
I thought, wait, they couldn't do it like this because of this, and they couldn't do it like this because of that.
It doesn't feel like the kind of ending that exists solely to have a sequel.
No. If they never made a sequel, it would be perfectly compact and self-contained. They don't need a sequel.
But I'm just saying, you know, there are certain movies where they twist themselves into knots
to make sure that there could be
one. To leave themselves in a place where that could happen. Yeah, and this one doesn't do that.
And this one... If they decide to make one, they're going to have to figure it out.
Clearly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you were saying that this was one of your favorite films of the year, which for late August is shocking. And actually, one of my favorite films of the year is also out this weekend, and that is Southside With You, which is a movie about Barack Obama and Michelle Robinson's first date.
Is that her original name?
Mm-hmm.
Robinson?
Yep.
Yeah.
In the summer of 1989... she is working for a corporate law firm, and he is a summer associate, and they are friendly. but because she is a black woman working in a principally white law firm, she does not want to start dating somebody from the office, certainly not the one other black guy in the office.
Right.
Nonetheless, he has asked her out to attend a meeting, a community activism meeting, but they actually wind up meeting early. They go to an art museum. They have lunch. They wind up later going to see Do the Right Thing and eventually go for ice cream, where they share their legendary first kiss over over a chocolate cone. I love this movie so much. And it doesn't have to be... It's not that it's about the Obamas that makes it so great. I think what it is it's a movie about these two fascinating, ambitious, interesting black people having this day where they are falling in love with each other. And we don't get those movies hardly ever.
No.
You know, I've heard it compared to the Richard Linklater Before films, and I think that's a totally apt comparison.
Yeah.
Because these
Before are, the White House.
Yeah. These are not like two sort of... This is not a movie about monuments etched in stone. These are people who have genuine disagreements and who call each other out on stuff. And,
right.
And Barack has like dad issues that come up a lot in conversation, and she kind of calls him on it. And she's working her ass off at this
law. Does she call him Barry?
No. She's
Does anyone?
No. I don't think so.
Okay.
She's
because I was under the impression that he actually went by that.
I think in his younger days. In high school he did.
In high school?
By this point, no.
Okay.
You know, she's you know, working at this corporate law firm for stuff that she doesn't believe in. He calls her out on it. They go to this meeting and he gets up to speak, and it's like this moment of, oh man, this guy can like hold a room in the palm of his hand. Parker Sawyers, who I've never seen before, I don't think, plays Obama, and he doesn't like actively impersonate him, but
right.
he gets the cadences and he gets the rhythms, and it sounds like you're watching him.
He's not doing Jay. He's not being Jay.
He's
Farrow.
Not being Jay Farrow. No. you know, he's smoking throughout because, you know, Obama
he
used
still,
to do that.
Well, he still smokes.
Yeah, but like he smokes a lot in this movie.
Okay.
You know, the legendary, you know, Datsun with the hole in the floor that Michelle has talked about, like at the convention.
So, uh-huh.
You know, just to see the future president driving around this crappy car and blasting Miss You Much from the radio, you know, and talking about.
That song's a jam.
Yeah. And talking about the cultural significance of good times. Like, yeah. That's exciting. And then Tika Sumpter, who's an actress I really like. She was in the Sparkle remake and she's been in some other stuff. As Michelle, it's almost the entire film is just the two of them on screen. There's only a few encounters with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so great. And it's so well written and beautifully directed. And, you know, it's just gorgeous. Richard Tanne, T-A-N-N-E, I believe it's his first feature. White guy.
When I heard this was coming, I just thought, Hagiography, or is it Hagiography?
Hagiography, yeah.
It's Hagiography. I was going to say Hagiography, but it's Hagiography, yeah? That's how you pronounce it?
That's how my understanding is.
I was concerned when I heard what it was. I just thought, you know, we liberals, we left-wing people, should we be having, you know, these films... But then I thought, you know what? No, we should have this movie because that terrible Obama's America by what's-his-face,
Dinesh D'Souza,
exists. So F that guy.
Yes.
Let's have a movie about the first date.
And here's the
I'm
thing.
I'm on board now.
I think that, you know, it because it has to be about the Obamas to get this movie made. If you mm-hmm. try and pitch this movie...
As anyone else,
no one's going to want to make it. Or you have to make it for, like, you know, $10,000 and hope that maybe...
And people
you know,
will... And it'll be called Love Jones and seven people went to see it.
Exactly.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm totally fine with it being about him. And there have been other, like, I think I forget who reviewed it for The Wrap, but he said, you know, the closest comparison is probably PT-109.
Right.
Because that came out while Kennedy was in office.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't feel gooey to me. And it didn't, you know, and it didn't feel like a movie that even if you, you know, obviously if you are part of the rabid Tea Party, you know, thinks that Obama is a secret socialist Kenyan, you're never going to watch this movie.
Also, you're stupid.
Yes, but I think that
none of our listeners are this way.
If you're just somebody who maybe disagrees with Obama's policies or whatever, like, I don't think that you would be turned off by this movie. The movie is not trying to build a halo around him. It's just these two interesting people, and here's how they met, and, you know... I just think it's really effective, and I was moved by it, and I laughed, and I just you know, it could have gone on for another hour, and I would have been enraptured. It's a really...
Oh, so you don't want to go see the new Lav Diaz film because it might be too long, but this you'll watch for another whole hour.
I'm saying my time in Venice is at a premium because I'm there for work, and Lav Diaz is not high on my list of things that I need to see for work.
I just looked it up, by the way.
Uh-huh.
It's called The Woman Who Left.
Uh-huh. How long?
3.5
Okay, well, don't hold your breath, but if I can swing it, I'll see what I can do. If only so I can come back and be like, I've seen the new Lav Diaz. You haven't, Dave White. So yeah, go see Southside With You. I very, very highly recommend it. And apparently it is having a pretty good opening weekend on, you know, I think it's opening in New York and L.A.
That's all the movies.
It's weird. You know, I saw that movie and The Light Between Oceans, which I'll talk about on next week's show, back to back.
Yeah.
And Southside With You opens with the Miramax logo.
Does it really?
Yeah, Miramax and Roadside Attractions are putting it out. And then Light Between Oceans opens with the Touchstone Pictures logo. And I was like, I'm sorry, is it 1992?
Yeah, what's going on?
Very strange.
I am confused by that. Okay, so I was asked this week by our friend Paige to make a list. Well, not to make a list, but to...
Discuss.
To discuss the BBC 100 Greatest Films list.
Yes.
I did not, as a film critic, I did not participate in this list.
Mm-hmm.
You did.
I did.
They asked you to participate in
this
list. Do you happen to have your list
available? I can open it, because they published a separate page where they listed who voted and what they voted for. So I will go to that. Of the 10 films that I listed, 7 of them made it to the top 100 list.
Which 3 did not?
American Splendor did not. Weekend did not, and How to Survive a Plague did not.
Okay.
I'm not really surprised about any of those, but, you know, I stand by them.
Yeah.
And somebody asked me on the Facebook page why I didn't include Toy Story 3, and Bibbs made a point when we did the B-Movies podcast talk about our favorite films of the decade, and I always say Toy Story 3 is my favorite.
Yeah.
Bibbs says there's sort of a difference between, like, your favorites and the best, and I would say Toy Story 3 is probably more of a favorite. Like, I can acknowledge to a certain extent that it may not be one of the best, but it's just a movie that impacted me in a certain way.
Yes.
All right, so here was my list. At number 1, Synecdoche, New York.
Yes.
Number 2, Brokeback Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Number 3, Weekend.
Yeah.
Number 4, 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days.
Yes.
Number 5, Spirited Away.
Mm-hmm.
Number 6, How to Survive a Plague. Number 7, Talk to Her. Number 8, American Splendor. Number 9, In the Mood for Love. And number 10, Far From Heaven.
Okay.
So of those, I think In the Mood for Love probably ranked the highest. That was like in the top 3, I think.
Yeah.
So what were your thoughts about the list overall?
Well,
oh no, In the Mood for Love is number 2.
Most of the films on the list I consider to be worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
2 that stick out that I don't like at all are Requiem for a Dream and City of God.
Yeah, I'll give you those.
I don't like either of those movies, although I will say that there are moments in Requiem for a Dream that I find really entertaining.
Sure.
In their wildness.
Yes. I would.
But I don't like the movie, and I really dislike City of God.
I would question the presence of Margaret, but then I still haven't seen the director's cut, so I will withhold. You know.
In that, I think most of these films are...
Oh, The Diving Bell and the Butterfly? Come on.
I can't be a good judge of Diving Bell and the Butterfly.
Because of your mom?
Because of my mom, who experienced something...
Akin
to that.
Yeah.
After her stroke. And so, when I saw it, I found it deeply affecting, but I was really under-distanced from it.
Right.
And then I began reading all these bad reviews. And I thought, oh, wait, is this a bad movie? And I just am thinking about my mommy.
Well, obviously, a lot of people love it if it's on this list. I'm also not the biggest fan of The Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, I liked it okay.
No, I think The Wolf of Wall Street is fantastic. Steve McQueen's Shame, far less interesting film than
Hunger.
Than Hunger.
Yes, I agree.
From the same man. The
Ratatouille and Inside Out, I both think, are not as good as Toy Story 3. And those are both on the list.
Yeah. So, you know, it's... I've seen 89.
Yeah, I've seen 80.
Of the 100 films. And so I think most of them are really worthwhile. I don't know if they are the greatest films of the century so far, but I think a lot of them are at least good, often very good, and a few of them are masterpiece level.
Sure. Touring Horse came in at number 63.
Correct, yes. So, here's the problem with any list.
Yes.
Any list...
reflects consensus.
Reflects a consensus. It's not like the 100 people or so. How many people voted on this thing? 100 people? 200 people?
Good question.
A lot of folks.
Yeah.
But even though a lot of folks voted on this, they weren't a broad cross-section, and there were entire...
177 critics.
There were entire sites, film websites, and film publications that were not represented at all.
Right.
So I find that strange. I am of the impression, based on what I've heard some other sort of naysaying critics talk about,
mm-hmm.
that the majority of the critics who were polled were either, you know, Northern, Western, European,
men,
North American, mostly men, mostly white guys.
Yeah.
And there is a tendency among anybody of any region in the world to prioritize their own culture, their own country, their own experience of film. And so the idea that, well, not the idea, the fact that people like Lucretia Martel, whose film Headless Woman made the list, but mm-hmm. high up in like the 70s. The fact that you know, she was low on the list and represented by one film.
Right.
Is weird. The fact that you know, people like Lev Diaz and people like Pedro Costa and people like last name Regadas, what's his first name?
I don't know.
The guy who made Battle in Heaven and then I'm blanking. Anyway,
I mean,
filmmakers from Mexico and South America and a lot of the Asian filmmakers, and you know, I think there might be one or two African.
Yeah, I think Simbene.
Simbene Mulade.
Yeah,
is on the Osman Simbene. His film, Mulade, which I have seen, is, you know, I think he might be the one on the list. And
I mean, to be fair, the top 10 does include Oscar Farhadi's A Separation, mm-hmm. Edward Yang's Yi Yi,
yes.
Hayao Miyazaki's Spirited Away,
yes.
and Wong Kar-wai's In the Mood for Love.
Yes.
So it's not entirely white, but you're right. Only 10% of the films were either directed or co-directed by women.
I think that...
although, again, that puts you in an Oscar-so-white position of, like, you know, we're talking about the end point here and not the beginning point about who's getting funded to make movies in the first place.
I want to be very clear. I want no one to misunderstand me.
Okay.
I do not want female filmmakers and filmmakers of color to simply be stuck in someone's list because of the fact
as
that
a,
they
as
are...
as a quota.
As a quota. I want their films to be paid attention to...
because they're good.
Because they're good films!
Yes.
Because... because my a good 50 to 60% of my favorite filmmakers on the planet right now
mm-hmm.
are not dudes and not white. And it has nothing to do
with
honestly,
their non-dudeness, or
with
not
their non-dudeness and their not-whiteness. It's just that their films are so damn good. Claire Denis, Is she in this very
often? White Material's in there.
And what else?
That might
when everything she makes is incredible, is The Intruder on this list at all? I don't think it is.
I don't think it is.
So, you know, we've got Hu Hsiao-hsien.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one
assassins
or,
in there.
One or two films by him. Mm-hmm. I am going to fault, you know, as I always do, the fact that many, many critics do not go out of their way to see world cinema. And the fact that, you know, critics who maybe aren't from this country or England or, you know,
there are two Western very Europe. Cool films.
Okay. Well, he's kind of a he's kind of a darling right now.
Yeah, Boon Mi, Tropical Malady, and Syndromes, I think, all made the list.
He's kind of a critical darling right now. So I just Xie Zhangke, did he have stuff in here?
Mm-mm.
How is that possible? So, this is a list of 100 mostly good, mostly very good, occasionally great films.
Yeah.
And it is the beginning of a conversation and not a definitive list under any circumstances.
No.
Particularly under the circumstances under which this list was created. It was created and collated in a way that left a lot of people out, left a lot of film critics out, left a lot of filmmakers out. So, I'm not mad. I'm just saying, don't go to this list and go, well, this is the best. Because what this list is a jumping off point for you, the adventurous filmgoer, to go have your adventure and hunt and look for this stuff.
And I'm sure your list would have been a lot bolder than mine. But, you know, I stand behind my choices.
I don't see any difference between you and me.
You are more likely to seek out the further corners of the film universe, and you have more of an interest and more time to do that. I mean, I think that unfortunately, the way that film criticism works now is that, you know,
you're on the major release treadmill. I know.
Yeah,
and I was too. When I was at movies.com, that was the treadmill I was on as well.
Yeah,
and thank God I was in a position to quit. And indulge what I really, really want to indulge in. And I don't even think of it as an indulgence. I think of it as focusing on the study of the films that I find the most important, the filmmakers that I find the most important.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had the great privilege of the past year, during the past year, of doing that. Because for me, entertainment is wonderful, and I'm all for it, and I like to be entertained. It is why I watch Little Women Atlanta. However, for me, film is entertainment and a thing that I have spent my life, this is going to sound like a homework word, but studying, pleasurably
sure.
Studying this stuff, reading about it, thinking about it, hunting it out, seeking it out, digging for it, and being happy every time I discover something new, particularly something that challenges me to the point of not even understanding it, which has recently happened.
Yes.
As I've dug deeper into the Strauss-Puiet
right.
universe. And I believe that a lot of film critics go to their job with a shield of armor on them, and that armor is a big sign that says, I already know what I need to know, back off, because their opinion has to be taken seriously. They might not have power, but they must have credibility,
authority,
and some sort of authority. And if you admit not to knowing, if you admit that, oh gosh, that's this
Cemetery of Splendor.
This complicated thing didn't make sense to me. I can't admit to that. you know. So a lot of elements come into play here.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm bolder. I just think I'm, you know, weird, and I want to find. I want to look under the rock for the thing that no one's telling me to look for.
You can listen to albums of noise and find the music, and to me it's just noise. And there are movies that you can look at and find the movie, and to me it's just noise.
Okay.
And I admire that about you. I wish I had your palate for some of this stuff. But, you know, I at least will try to, you know, I mean, within the confines that I am dealing with in a mainstream website, I try to cover stuff that I think is, even if it's not going to get the clicks, that is important and needs to be, you know,
Our monthly argument is you assigning me like one or two reviews. Mm. And then me saying, well, can't I review blah, blah, blah instead? You know, some tiny little, you know, thing that's coming out. And you're like, I don't have the budget for that. and you know, it's a film that's opening on one screen.
Yeah.
Nationwide.
Right.
You know. But every month I'm pushing you for it. And every month you're like, no. We're a website that people read and
Director X is not interested.
No one's going to click on that.
However,
little tiny thing.
You know what? You have a podcast and you have a website.
I do have a podcast.
You should go see that stuff and you should talk about it.
Yeah. And, oh, speaking of that, where's The Death of Mr. Lazarescu? Is that on this list? Or is it just 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days?
I think it might just be 4 months, 3 weeks.
See? Another glaring omission.
I liked Death of Mr. Lazarescu. I like 4 months better. That's why I put it on my list.
I like Death of Mr. Lazarescu better. Yeah.
Well, those guys both had new movies at Cannes this year.
I know.
I'm hoping to catch at least one of them.
Very excited. One of my favorite films this year is from one of the Romanian guys, The Treasure. It came out in January.
Yes.
It played for 1 week on one screen in Los Angeles, but boy, did I sure dig it.
You know what keeps coming up on these lists, and I just have to see it because it keeps coming up on these lists?
What?
Spike Lee's The 25th Hour.
Correct.
Never saw it, yeah. And people keep talking about it, so I guess I gotta see it.
Yeah, it's number 26 of the 100.
Yeah, have you seen it?
Nope.
We need to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll be a mutual make me.
That's a good idea. So anyway, I don't know, in getting back to Paige's original question.
Is Active Killing the only documentary on here?
Maybe. Yeah. Where are the Wiseman films? Any of them? You know?
Mm.
Where are any Frederick Wiseman films?
Yeah, I think it is the only documentary on this entire list.
I've had him on the brain lately because Cinefamily is doing a retrospective.
Yes.
And while you're in Italy, I'm going to see at least two of them.
Yeah.
Back to back.
I'm so...
Which I never do, but I'm going to do it for him.
I'm so pissed I didn't get to see... They had a new 35 of Titicut Follies at Cinefamily last night.
Mm-hmm.
We were pre-taping shows and doing a club meeting, so I didn't get to see it.
Yeah. I'm going to see High School.
Mm-hmm.
And Law and Order.
Nice.
Which is not related to the TV show at all.
No. The what Cinefamily is doing this fall only goes up to like, what, 1975 or something?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to tell the audience, but I've been in communication with Sapporo Films recently.
Oh, right.
Regarding...
LK Selector.
LK Selector, yeah.
Oh, we didn't do our...
Hey guys, we have a club. It's called Linoleum Knife, the club, and you join it by going to Patreon, patreon.com/linoleumknife. If you would like to join our club, you pay us money every month through Patreon. You begin at $4 a month, or you pay more dollars a month if you are rich and want more things. Each level that you go up, you get more things. But at the $4 level, my favorite, because I'm a cheapskate, you get LKTV, the podcast of the television that we do every week. And we are about to...
We're going to be recapping...
We're about to start covering...
Logo's Finding Prince Charming.
The Gay Bachelor show that's going to be on Logo.
You know you want to hear us talk about that.
I Maybe you do. Anyway,
I think you do.
You should join our club. That's all. That's a commercial for us. Thank you.
So, no, yeah. The LK Selector folks might be getting a little support.
We don't know. We're figuring that out right now.
Maybe. Yeah. You're right. I think this is a list that it's a good conversation starter. It's not a bad list of, hey, I need to see that. But it's not the end point of any film discussion. And certainly check out the filmmakers of color and the female filmmakers who are on that list. Definitely dig deeper into their work because it's not reflected all that well. I mean, like Agnes Varda had, you know, The Gleaners and I made the list in like the 90s, but not The Beaches of Agnes.
Right. Right. We're done. This is a short little episode.
So no letters this time? We have a ton of letters next week, I know, but...
We have a gang of letters next week.
Okay, fair enough. So yeah, next week's episode, you'll get tons of
all letters and we're going to...
And other fun stuff.
Finish them up, yeah.
Okay, as always, thank you for
this is a short episode.
Yeah, I know, we bring it under an hour. It's shocking.
Is it under an hour?
It's under an hour.
Wow. Let's do a couple letters.
Okay, yeah. read the James Scales.
Read the
James Scales letter, because it actually ties into the conversation we're having about Frederick Wiseman.
Okay. Pause it, please, while I dig him up.
Okay.
This is from James. Hi, David Alonzo. I wanted to let you know that during Barnes & Noble's recent half-off Criterion collection sale, I bought Charade and Shoah.
Nice. There's a double feature.
Hoping to win your love and approval. Zipporah Films is having a sale through the end of August. Most of Frederick Wiseman's documentaries are $15 on DVD. I'm going to get The Store,
yay,
among others. Having read about it in Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas and heard about it on the podcast. In conclusion, my home video purchases are now guided by the question, what would David Alonzo do?
That's right.
That is from James. Charade and Shoah are not a good double feature.
No, I was kidding.
Here's why.
Shoah is not a double feature with anything.
Shoah is 9 hours long. So... even though Cloud Lansman says you should watch it all in one go, I've seen that movie 3 times, and I've never watched it all in one go. I have watched it in chunks. Easy chunks.
When it was distributed theatrically in the U.S. in the 80s,
yeah,
it was, you would go see like the first half and the second half, and seeing the first half meant seeing two-hour chunks with an intermission.
Yes.
And ditto the second half.
Yeah.
One go, that's, no one's got the bladder for that.
Well, I mean, even if you were going to do it all in one day, it would be like with breaks.
Yeah.
But honestly, I get the idea that the monumental quality of it, if you experienced it all in one day, you would finish that day feeling as though, like, a Zamboni had run over you. And while that is a valid sort of experience to have, I just can't sit that long. I just can't. I can't sit down that long.
Yeah, it's like trying to watch Out One in one sitting.
I got to get up. I got to do things. I need a snack. I got to go to the bathroom. You know, It is a demanding film, and I think that if you're watching it in 9 one-hour chunks, it's a perfectly valid way to watch it. And honestly, will give you a chance to really focus intently on it without worrying that you have 7 more hours to deal with
right,
it.
Right, right. And then that Criterion box contains... other
films. The Criterion box has everything else it's got.
Except for...
It's got A Visitor from the Living. It's got... No, it doesn't. Hang on. Pause.
What was the one that was released theatrically recently that's not on there? Like the...
Did you pause it?
No. We're still, okay, you need to... We're talking.
Pause it.
Pause it while
I look it
all
up.
All right.
Thank you for pausing it, Alonzo, for me to go look it up and not waste time. The Showa Criterion box has Showa, 1985. It has 1999's A Visitor from the Living. It has 2001's Sobibor, October 14th, 1943, 4 p.m. It has 2010's The Karski Report.
But it doesn't have...
It does not have 2013's The Last of the Unjust.
The Last of the Unjust.
Which is about the Theresienstadt ghetto.
Right.
And that alone is about 4 hours long.
And all of this stuff is from the same shoot, right?
Cloud Lansman shot all this stuff starting in...
The 70s.
And turned it into a series of films.
9 hours was not enough.
9 hours was not enough because when you watch the others, they blow your mind. So a great, honestly, a great investment is that Criterion Showa box because there is so much in it and it's so incredible. And Showa is a masterpiece. There's anybody who says otherwise is wrong.
I think no purchase could encapsulate the difference in our aesthetics more than Showa and Charade. It's all, that's, you know, forget the BBC 100. That's it right there. You're Showa, I'm Charade.
Tom Ford, not the Tom Ford.
Our Tom Ford.
Our Tom Ford. He sends a letter. How does this garbage fire of a movie, he is referencing War Dogs, have more than a single-digit score on Rotten Tomatoes? At the time of his email, it had a 61%, which squeaks it into the Director X category of a juicy red tomato.
Yeah.
I think it is the worst, most unwatchable turd of a movie that I have seen in the past 5 years.
Some critics whom I respect, including Matt Singer,
yes,
liked that movie. And yeah, I wonder if... It is a...
What do they have to say about it? Why do they say it's okay?
I couldn't bring myself to read the review. I just saw the headline.
I wanted to kick it in the neck.
I think that, I try not to fall back on this much, but in going back to what we were just talking about, I think if this is a movie where if you're a straight white guy, you might give it more of a pass.
Really?
I think.
Maybe
I'm wrong.
No.
I'm not saying all straight white guys are going to give it a pass, but I'm just saying if you're likely to be kinder to this film...
Maybe.
Because it's that whole Todd Phillips thing. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Just a thought.
This is from Clint. Hey, Dave and Alonzo. The only answer I can come up with as to why Florence Foster Jenkins was completely oblivious to her inability to sing were due to her treatments of mercury and arsenic.
Oh.
She was a, quote, Mad Hatter socialite, and people just thought she was eccentric. Or maybe they showed her pity because they knew she was sick. The film has its problems, but I still enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, my issue with the film wasn't her not knowing about her talent or lack thereof. It was that it couldn't come up with a consistent feeling about it. You know, whether we were supposed to find her pitiable or admirable or whatever, the movie doesn't seem to make up its mind.
Oh, here's a question from Jess.
Yes.
There's something I've been wondering for the last month or so. Do y'all have a squeaky screen door? I hear this noise in the background a couple times per episode, and I must know what it is.
I don't think.
What could that be?
Should I walk over and open the screen?
We do not have a squeaky screen door, so what is the thing she's hearing? Is it a case? Do we sometimes leave the ceiling fan on? Is that the squeaky noise? That doesn't squeak.
We've been good about turning that.
What could that be?
I don't know. Like, maybe one of the cabinets in the kitchen or something?
What, poltergeisting itself open and closed?
No, but like when you're making tea or something. And you're
No. Like apparently while we're talking, there's a squeaky noise.
Maybe it's one of our neighbors. They're squeaky.
It might be a neighbor.
Because we have the window open.
The windows are always, let me lay it down for you here in terms of like helping you visualize what's going on.
We're not in a studio.
We are at our dining room table. Does it squeak? Nope. It used to squeak.
It did. The old one.
The old table we had was vintage metal
joints
for mica topped dinette set from the 50s. But I guess this is referring to
recent episodes.
But we are in our dining room, and it is the summertime. All the windows are open.
We do not have air conditioning.
We do not have air conditioning. There's no fan on over our head. Generally, we remember to turn off the ceiling fan. There is a lot of street noise.
Sure.
There's neighbor noise.
Dogs.
Occasional dog barking. Helicopters and things that go over. I don't know what it could be.
Hmm.
I'm wearing these beautiful noise-canceling headphones, and all I hear is my gorgeous...
sonorous voice.
Speaking voice. I don't know the answer to this question. If other people are hearing a squeaky noise and might have an idea what it could be or what it sounds like, please write us.
Linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
We never promised you a professional
squeak-free garden.
A recording experience. Sir Arcane says, David Alonso, in previous episodes, you have talked about your extensive collection of movies on VHS and DVD and how it has grown and changed over the years. I was wondering if back in the day you collected in any of the less popular formats, such as HD DVD. I don't even know what that is.
That was kind of that and Blu-ray were kind of battling it out for a while.
CED. I don't know what that is either.
That might be those Selectivision discs that your mother had.
Well, he says Laserdisc.
Well, Laserdisc is what I have.
Those are different. You have like a handful of Laserdiscs.
Yes.
But no Laserdisc player.
Correct. It died.
And you...
Well, finish the letter. My mom
had a Selectivision back in the 80s.
The cartridge. I think that the CED is the cartridge kind.
And he asks also for Betamax.
I never had Beta. We had Beta at... in my high school TV station. That's the only time I ever used Beta. I did have a Laserdisc player. I bought a Laserdisc player very late in the Laserdisc game, like right when DVDs were starting to come out, but before DVDs were really good about having extras or even being letterboxed. So I had a Laserdisc player, and I've hung on to a handful of Laserdiscs of stuff that isn't out on DVD yet. And I used to, you know, I for a long time, my Laserdisc player was living at our friend Dave's house because he could make digital transfers off of Laserdiscs. And he did that for a few things that I have, but not, sadly, not for everything. And the player died. But I'm still hanging on to them just in case, like if I find somebody else who can make transfers or whatever. But like, I still have my, you know, Claude Lelouch's 1995 Les Miserables, which I love and has never been put out on DVD. I have Tati Daniel. I have, you know, three or four other ones. Sticky Fingers.
And who doesn't remember that when it's Laserdisc release?
Indeed. So that was as deep into the trenches as I got. I had forgotten about HD DVD, but yeah, there was a moment where, like, some companies were sort of backing the HD DVD horse and other companies were backing Blu-ray. It was kind of like VHS versus Beta.
Who's going to win?
Yeah, and Blu-ray totally won and HD DVD went away. I think Dave K might have been on the HD DVD bandwagon for a hot second. I forget now.
He's a nerd.
Yes. But that's it. I never had the Selectivision. I never had
My family's first VHS player was a Betamax.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there wasn't a VHS player.
Sorry. My family's first VCR was a Betamax.
Mm-hmm.
Because my stepfather had a Betamax porn collection.
Ah, well then.
So it was very important.
Naturally.
That he be able to watch his Beta porn on it.
Now, did he buy porn videos, or was this like stuff that he'd copied somewhere?
Oh, he bought Beta porn.
I see.
Back in the early 80s.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And he was very excited to own. He was so happy to be able to own porn on Beta. I watched a couple of them when family wasn't home, and I was like, I gotta look at this. I need to know what's going on in the world of sexy X-rated movies.
How old were you at the time?
I was 16, 17. Okay. Yeah. So when no one was home, I'd be like, I'm gonna watch this. And
did he always rewind? Did you have to like keep it in the same place so that he wouldn't notice?
Oh, he always rewound. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, he was very kind to himself. And so terrible movies and boring. And I was 16, and everything was sexual at 16. And still, I was like, They suck.
Nothing famous, no, like Debbie Does Dallas or
No. All just like cheap fly by night kind of garbage. Gotcha. You know. Yeah.
I remember one time renting what must have been a really early like porn VHS title, a gay one, because it had this whole ad on it that was all like now at home. Like it was they were super excited about this new technology. And it was in the ad it literally had like the top loading VHS player with like the fake wood grain in between two ferns.
Nice.
It was very early 80s chic. You know?
Nice. The letter goes on. For the record, my ex, a total movie buff, would wax nostalgic about watching films on CED. Shortly before we broke up, he had me wire his Laserdisc player to a DVD recorder so he could transfer some titles that had not been released on DVD or Blu-ray yet.
You know, it's funny. Somebody was just asking me about, like, why do they even put out DVDs anymore? Who bothers to buy DVDs? I'm like, well, you know what? If there's something that you want to reliably have in your library, you can't rely on streaming. You can't even rely on, like, paid streaming sources like Amazon or whatever because things go away. You know, you have to have a hard copy because the whims of copyright owners and deals and whatever comes and goes. And so, you know, if you want to have this stuff tangibly, you got to own it.
Yeah.
Your mom had a CED player because somebody had like left it in an apartment, right? In the building that she
was
in.
My mother was the manager of an apartment complex. Yeah.
And didn't we like buy her a bunch off of eBay of like other movies or
garage sale stuff that we found like 10 for a dollar or something? Yeah. Oh, yeah. She was excited about that. Because she would watch. My mom was the kind of regular mom who would watch a movie and then immediately forget what she had watched and not remember the title or anything. And then a year later, what was that movie?
It has that guy who was in that thing.
And it's about the people, you know, like, and you'd be playing 20 questions with her about a film that she should have remembered the title of it, at least remember the title of. So, we're done.
Okay. Yeah. Apparently, listeners had been telling me about this, and I'm just slow on the uptake. You can stream this show on Podbean, which is an app.
Okay.
You can also stream it on Stitcher Radio and thelounge.com, and you can leave us positive feedback in all those places. Or you could subscribe for free at iTunes and leave us a nice review there as well. We greatly appreciate it. Do check out all of our friends on the internet. Go to blutopia.com, BLEUTOPIA to find out more about Blue, the talented composer of our theme music, and we thank you for that. Go to ChristyLemire.com, check out the Rotten Tomatoes podcast, go check out the B-Movies podcast, or Canceled Too Soon, both featuring our friends Bibbs and Whitney. The Schmoes Know, the Joelle Ryan thing, The Sewers of Paris, the Comics Canon, Fat Guys in the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Film Spotting SVU, the Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can follow us online at Linoleum Cast, whether on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. You can follow Dave on Twitter at D Leland White, all one word. You can
I'm D Leland White everywhere.
Yeah, also on Instagram.
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, D Leland, L E L A N D White.
And I am at A Duraldi, A D U R A L D E, on Twitter. And again, our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to join our club, we're at patreon.com/linoleumknife. I will be back from Venice in a couple of weeks. We have pre-taped an episode for you, like we said, for next weekend. And when we return in a couple of weeks, I will talk about the stuff that I saw while
Oops,
I was...
I hit the mic!
Gah! Mark that on your bingo card. I'll talk about the stuff that I saw over there, which might or might not include the new Lev Diaz film. And
it won't. Just...
Who knows?
Don't make me promises that you're not
going to I'm not promising anything. I'm just promising that I'm not going to rule it out entirely.
Okay.
And, you know, whatever movies are opening that week and all that stuff. So anyway, catch you guys next time.
Goodbye. And that was goodbye number one.
I almost completely forgot that we were going to give away the ending of Sea of Trees. And thankfully, Dave reminded me before I posted this episode. So again, I'm about to spoil the ever-loving crap out of Gus Van Sant's The Sea of Trees. So if you don't want to know all the secrets and surprises, stop listening now.
Turn it off right now.
Okay, here we go. So it turns out that, you know, Naomi Watts and Matthew McConaughey, they fight because she drinks and he cheated on her once. And they obviously still love each other because they do sort of secret nice things to each other, but never to a point that they would want the other person to say thank you. So, you know, that this is whole terrible marriage thing. And then she gets a brain tumor because she has a nosebleed after an argument once. And that, of course, means brain tumor. And so, you know, when it looks like she's going to die, they get all nice to each other and they remember why they love each other in the first place, blah, blah, blah. And they operate and the tumor is, this is all told in flashbacks. It's woven in throughout. They take the tumor out. It's benign. Hooray. She's going to live. Their marriage has a new lease on life, whatever, blah, blah, blah. They're transferring her to another hospital in an ambulance. He gives her a cell phone. He's driving behind the ambulance and talking to her to kind of keep her calm and relaxed. And she's saying how she's never been in the back of an ambulance before. And he's like, wow, how do I not know that about you? What else don't I know? Like, I don't know your favorite color or blah, blah, blah. And they're talking. And
does he actually say favorite color?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Who? Okay. I've been watching Bachelor in Paradise. And the doofuses on that show, when they're getting to know each other, ask each other things like favorite color. Mm. I've known you for 21 years. Mm-hmm. I don't know what your favorite color is.
I don't even know if I have a favorite
exactly.
color.
And do you know why? You know who has favorite colors?
Children.
Children. Proceed.
Okay. So anyway, so in the middle of the conversation, and when she's about to tell him what her favorite color is, blam! The ambulance gets hit by a cement truck that runs a stop sign, and she's dead.
Her favorite color is blood.
Yeah. So then at the funeral, you know, everybody has left the memorial, and he's sitting there alone next to the coffin, and he's all depressed, and the mortician's like, we have to close up. And he's like, I so much about her. He goes, I didn't know her. I mean, I knew her, but I didn't know her favorite color or her favorite book or
He brings that up again.
Yes. Or her favorite book or her favorite season. And the guy says, well, I know her favorite book was a children's story. I heard one of her sisters talking about
good.
How she ordered it, you know, had for her, blah, blah, blah. And a package has come for the wife.
Nothing I like more than an adult whose favorite book is a children's book.
So McConaughey takes this package with him to Japan and you know, puts it, leaves it somewhere in the forest along the way. So then he takes care of Ken Watanabe and some of the things that Watanabe says parallels the things that Naomi Watts had said about how, like, being near the water was like paradise. And there's a reference to the song Stairway to Paradise from An American in Paris.
Yes.
Which it's kind of funny because, you know, since Watanabe says it and McConaughey says, do you mean Stairway to Heaven? He's like, no, Stairway to Paradise. and at one point, when they're lost in the forest, they make some joke about how they should have left breadcrumbs. And Ken Watanabe says, you are handsome. And McConaughey says, what? He goes, handsome and Gretel. And McConaughey laughs. He goes, no, Hansel and Gretel. I was worried there for a second. I'm like, oh, come on, gay filmmaker. Do we have to have this Bob Hope joke about, oh, I was worried? Anyway.
Ken Watanabe is more handsome than Matthew McConaughey. Anyway.
Exactly. So at one point, you know, Ken Watanabe has mentioned the name of his wife and his child, which McConaughey is trying to use later when he gets
the
rescued.
The gentlemanly response, by the way, is when a man says you're handsome to another man, that man, regardless of his sexual orientation, should say, thank you very much. You too are handsome.
Yes.
We're handsome together.
And move on. So later, when McConaughey gets rescued and they're trying to find Watanabe, who there is no evidence of him having entered the forest on any of the security cameras, you know, and he's got a super generic name, McConaughey mentions the name of his wife and child, but nobody can find anything, blah, blah, blah. So finally, McConaughey finds the package again when he's looking for Watanabe in the forest and opens it, and it's Hansel and Gretel. That's the wife's favorite book. And then he's got a piece of paper in it with the wife and
child. I wish you could hear the stare that I'm giving you right now.
There's more. Oh, there's more. Then he stuffs the piece of paper in it with the name of the Watanabe character's wife and daughter written on it. And then later when McConaughey, who's a college professor, is back in his office, this kid who comes in for office hours sees the piece of paper sticking out and he says, "Yellow Winter?" And it turns out that the words, the names that Watanabe gave him for his wife and child are yellow and winter, her favorite color and her favorite season. Ken Watanabe was Naomi Watts all along, and she was there to keep McConaughey from killing himself so that she could go to the other side and let him live knowing that their love had blah, 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 blah.
So he, wait, Ken Watanabe was the ghost of
Naomi Watts.
Naomi Watts. Okay.
It's such so stupid, this movie. And again,
they should have kissed then.
If they had taken, well, he doesn't know this until Watanabe has left only a flower behind him to show that his soul had departed.
They should have kissed.
If there had been a massive rewrite of this movie and Van Sant had allowed things to be implied and not said on the nose and taken out about 8 of the twists, there might have been a movie here, but it's so the script is so bad it just torpedoes the whole thing. So I can totally imagine why it can. Once that final reveal happens, they were all like, "Oh, come boo." Boo! I, however, saw it in a screening that was sponsored by LA Yoga Magazine. So those namaste MFers all applauded politely at the end. I was like, oh, right. Come on! Don't support this. All right, so that's it. That's the Sea of Trees. Don't go see it. It's stupid.
Great. We done?
We're done.
Okay. Goodbye for real this time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.